Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's video, I am giving you several horrifying camping stories. Warnings of what not to do, where not to go, and what to avoid if you plan on surviving. Or you could simply not go camping and just listen to me. Sounds like a safer bet. And a special shout out to Not Not Sag, which is one of the authors tonight. Now sit back. Relax, dim those lights, and let's get spooky. The sun dipped below the horizon, casting an eerie, almost ethereal glow upon the dense woods. In the company of my dearest friends, Meg, Osmond, Alexa, and Osmond's loyal companion, Toby, we huddled around a campfire. The flames danced with exuberance, casting long, flickering shadows that seemed to defy the laws of nature. Laughter filled the night as we savored the simple joys of roasting marshmallows and sharing humorous anecdotes. Yet beneath this veneer of normality, an unsettling unease clung to the air. As darkness gradually encircled our camp, an otherworldly, spine-tingling howl pierced the tranquility of the night. It sent shivers down our spines. But it wasn't the call of a wolf, as we initially assumed. It was Toby. Our beloved canine companion was howling and crying, his eyes wide with a terror we had never witnessed before. Even Osmond, the embodiment of stoicism, paled at the sight. "Something's wrong," he whispered. His unease was justified. Toby had never cowered in fear. As the night deepened, we eventually retreated to our tents. Well past midnight, I heard a faint, distant howl, echoing the earlier one. Sensing that something was amiss, I emerged from my tent to find my friends gathered outside their own, their faces etched with worry. Just as I was about to inquire about the eerie noise, Osmond, his expression laced with concern, informed us that Toby was nowhere to be found in his tent. A growing sense of trepidation enveloped us as we scoured the camp, calling out Toby's name. It was then that we heard it again, the haunting, mournful howl, louder and more disconcerting than before. In an instant, panic gripped our group. We instinctively turned towards the source of the noise, confirming that it was indeed Toby. Shadows converged at the periphery of the firelight, as though the forest itself harbored a sinister secret. After a few moments of heated discussion, Alexa, the bravest amongst us, declared, "We have to find Toby. We can't just stay here," with a sense of urgency. Meg, the voice of reason, tried to maintain a veneer of reassurance. "Stay calm, everyone. We'll split into two groups and try to find him." Despite our attempts to rationalize the situation, an eerie sense of foreboding weighed heavy in the air. Every rustling leaf, every distant sound, and every whisper of the wind carried an ominous message from the forest. Nevertheless, Our determination to find Toby fueled our actions, driven by the hope that he was merely lost and frightened. As our two groups ventured deeper into the dark forest, the atmosphere grew increasingly oppressive. An ominous mist rolled in, enshrouding us in bone-chilling fog that obscured our surroundings. My group, consisting of Meg and me, stood watch at the edge of the forest near the campsite, while Osmond and Alexa ventured deeper into the woods in search of Toby. Time blurred into a nightmarish collage of fear. We called out for Toby, our flashlights piercing the inky blackness. Shadows danced at the edge of our vision, eluding our attempts to confront them. The forest thickened, its gnarling branches resembling skeletal fingers reaching out into the night. I could barely see beyond the pale beam of my flashlight, and an eerie sensation of being watched settled over me. After some time, we realized that we had not heard from Osmond and Alexa in a while. Fear gnawed at our hearts, and we decided to make our way deeper into the woods, hoping to reunite with them. Eventually, the forest became eerily silent, to the point where I could hear the beating of my own heart. It was an unsettling feeling, akin to the sensation of being watched, as though unseen eyes observed our every move. I whispered to Meg that I hadn't heard any sounds other than our footsteps for a while, but she remained silent and continued walking. Turning around, I was struck by the realization that she was no longer beside me, yet I could distinctively hear footsteps directly behind me. Then, in an instant, a malevolent figure materialized. It was a shadowy, nebulous form, with eyes, if one could call them that, gleaming with malevolence. A frigid shiver of terror coursed through me as it loomed in the darkness, whispering incomprehensible words, a language not meant for human ears. Overwhelmed by fear, I sprinted through the forest, my gaze fixed on the faint glimmer of moonlight in the distance. The forest appeared to warp and shift around me as if it was a living entity. I could feel the presence of the malevolent figure pursuing me, taunting me with unfathomable words, an unrelenting force of darkness. I burst back into the clearing where we had set up camp, my heart pounding and my breath ragged. However, the camp was eerily empty, the fire long extinguished. My friends were gone, and I was left standing alone, surrounded by the oppressive darkness of the forest. Gasping for breath, I heard the chilling laughter of unseen entities, while the forest itself whispered malevolent secrets. In a state of panic and shock, I remained in the abandoned camp, my thoughts in disarray. The darkness closed in from all sides, and the sinister whispers of the forest continued to echo. A profound sense of isolation and despair enveloped me. I waited for what felt like hours, the sun casting long shadows as it began to rise. Yet my friends remained absent. It became apparent that I needed to seek help, and the nearest town was my only lifeline. I gathered my remaining belongings and retraced my steps through the darkened woods. Eerie sounds echoed through the forest during my departure, its oppressive ambience clinging to me like a suffocating shroud. I couldn't shake the feeling that something malevolent watched from the shadows, that the forest itself was a personification of evil. With every step, The echoes of shrieks and groans grew fainter, but the chilling presence of the unknown endured. Finally, I emerged from the oppressive forest into the outskirts of the town. My appearance was disheveled, my face itched with exhaustion, and my heart heavy with the weight of the unknown. I knew that I had to report my friends and Toby as missing, enlisting the help of the townspeople and local authorities.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Unraveling the sinister secrets of the woods. As I entered the town, the atmosphere shifted palpably. The town's residents regarded me with cautious, wary eyes, as if they could sense the darkness that clung to me from the forest. I made my way to the local authorities, my voice trembling as I recounted the harrowing events of the night. The inexplicable disappearances of my friends, and the ominous entity that had pursued me. The police organized search parties and ventured into the sinister woods. Even they could perceive the unease that pervaded the forest, their expressions betraying the fear that lingered in the air. However, despite their determined efforts, they found very little trace of our group. Days turned into weeks, and the mystery deepened. The police, baffled by my account of the events, could not provide a rational explanation for the disappearances. In the town, whispers began to circulate, suggesting that the forest was cursed. The unease that had taken root within me never truly dissipated, and I couldn't shake the feeling that we had awakened something sinister within those woods. Despite the lack of concrete evidence, I embarked on my own investigation, delving into old maps, uncovering local legends, and consulting experts in the realm of paranormal phenomena. Yet the more I delved into the history of the forest, the more elusive the answers became. The town's elders, shrouded in a silence born of fear, refused to divulge the forest's secrets. Years passed, but the memories of that fateful night continue to haunt me. The disappearance of Meg, Osmond, Alexa, and Toby remains an unsolved mystery, an enigma that defies explanation. The forest had claimed them, leaving me with a lingering sense of dread that would never truly dissipate. Despite the police's diligent efforts, the cursed woods safeguarded their secrets, and the dark presence within would forever torment my dreams. Yet, even now, I still find myself standing on the edge of the forest, and I swear I see my friends in the distance waving me over, beckoning me to re-enter the forest and for us to be reunited once again. It was a chilly October morning when they set out on their way. Fred Williams, his girlfriend Melanie, best friend Pete, and Pete's girlfriend Jacqueline. Fred was a quiet loner type who was never very popular in high school. Melanie was a sweet and charming girl who had quite a few friends in her social circle. Pete was the kind of guy who thought he was God's gift to mankind, though he did care for his friends very deeply. Jacqueline liked the gossip and spread rumors more than anyone else they knew. This unlikely group of friends had become closer in their college years, as none of them went out of state while many of their other friends did. On the first weekend of the month, they had planned a camping trip to the woods near their hometown. Fred was the most familiar with the area, as he had been there several times as a Boy Scout on other camping trips. Pete and Jacqueline weren't thrilled about being away from modern conveniences, but spending time with Fred and Melanie was more important. When they arrived, they chose an open area surrounded by trees. It was serene and nearly silent as they began setting up their tents and the rest of their gear. They could hear birds chirping in the distance, and occasionally the rustling of falling leaves. They worked well as a team. Fred was reading the instructions for the tents. Pete hammered in the stakes for them. Melanie started gathering nearby wood for a fire, and Jacqueline searched the area for cell phone reception. She lamented that all the trees must have been blocking the signal. Once the tents had been all set up, the sun was beginning to set. They made a fire within a circle of rocks, as per Fred's suggestion, in order to keep it contained. Melanie produced marshmallows from her bag along with graham crackers and chocolate bars. Before long, the marshmallows were impaled by skewers and roasting for s'mores for the entire group's enjoyment. Pete stated that he was bored, and Jacqueline suggested that they played a campfire game. They started with Truth or Dare, but quickly found that it was too childish, even for the gossip queen herself. Pete then suggested that they all tell each other ghost stories in an effort to frighten one another. He also added a drinking game component, which involved visible flinching becoming grounds for one to down a bottle of beer from the cooler. They agreed, and each of them began thinking of a story they would tell as they finished their s'mores. Pete decided he wanted to go first since he was convinced his story would be the scariest. He told a modified version of the Hookman legend, which ended in the story's male protagonist punching the killer in the mouth and saving the day. Understandably, this scared no one, and as per another rule that he had set, Pete had to drink a beer because of it. He wasn't mad, but only because of the fact that his story failed to frighten. He was certainly no stranger to drinking beer, and it was all in good fun anyways. Melanie told of a tale of a college girl who had gone to stay at her roommate's house in the country over a holiday break. The weather was bad, the house was old, and there wasn't much to do. One night, the girls were in the house alone and a monstrous storm hit. The power went out and they decided to go to bed. They heard the door crash open, and the girl whose family owned the house went to close it. After a few tense minutes, she came back. Her frightened roommate reached out to touch her and soon found her to be decapitated. The boys laughed it off as being ridiculous. Jacqueline jumped a bit at the ending reveal, so she started drinking her beer as she began to relate her story. She shared a story about a teenage babysitter asked to look after a pair of children while their parents were at a social gathering. The children had gone to bed early, and she was up watching television when she began to receive strange hang-up calls from a blocked number. After a few times, a whispering voice on the other end asked, "Have you checked on the children?" The girl began to feel threatened, so she called the police and asked them to trace the call the next time a call came in. A more demanding voice accompanied the next call, ordering her to see what had happened to the children and claiming she would be next. At first, they seemed to be sleeping safe and sound in their beds. But then she turned the light on. Their throats had been slit and they were dead. At that moment, the police called back and informed her that the calls were coming from inside the house. She dropped the phone in terror and felt cold metal pressed against her throat. Pete flinched, causing him to have to drink another beer. Melanie and Fred both said that they had seen that in a recent movie that wasn't very well made. Finally, it was Fred's turn, and his expression turned very stern and serious. He spoke of a demon that liked to roam the forests and wooded areas like the one they were camping in. "The demon preys on the souls of the weak," he said, looking around at each of his friends. He once possessed a man in the car with his son and forced him to crash into a brick wall, killing him. The little boy watched his father die right before his eyes and could do nothing about it. Fred claimed that the demon was responsible for a variety of unexplained deaths and disappearances, including another boy who went missing from Pennsylvania and the brutal murders of a group of office employees on a camping trip of their own. He said it resembles a collection of animals molded together as one being. It has hoofs.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
For feet. A tall ape-like body, spade-shaped tail, claws like a rodent, bat-like wings, and the head of a goat, and eyes like that of a snake. He concluded by saying that you could summon the demon by saying its name, and then he shouted, "Tesorak!" Everyone jumped and subsequently had to drink a beer. They went to bed shortly thereafter and all went quiet. Pete got up late at night because the beer he drank required him to relieve his bladder frequently. He went into the trees and was quickly breathing a sigh of relief. Several minutes went by and he didn't return to his tent. Jacqueline had woken up and was still shaken from the scary stories. She waited for him to come back and comfort her. When he didn't, she knew that something was wrong. She went over to Fred and Melanie's tent to see if they were still awake. She didn't want to disturb anyone if they were sleeping, but she was concerned about her boyfriend's safety. She took a flashlight with her and roamed the nearby woods, calling his name at about average speaking volume. Off into the trees she went until something startled her. She screamed for only a second or two before her flashlight fell to the ground and silence enveloped the night once more. Melanie heard the scream, though. She asked Fred if he had heard it too. He said it was probably just Pete playing a joke on her to make up for not scaring anyone before. Melanie was still concerned and wanted Fred to check on them. He did, and quickly reported back that they weren't in their tent or in the immediate area. She insisted that they go out to look for their missing friends, because she was too scared to be left alone and they couldn't wait until morning. They grabbed their flashlights and started combing the area just beyond the fire's light. They moved out further and further, finding only more trees. They were within shouting distance of each other, but separated to cover more ground. Suddenly, Pete's mutilated body fell from a tree in front of Melanie and she screamed in terror. Fred ran to her, but it was too late. She had disappeared into the darkness, leaving only her flashlight behind. He picked it up and saw Pete's body on the ground. Hanging from a nearby tree was Jacqueline's body and her throat ripped out. He stumbled back to retreat to the campsite and fell on the ground. He reached for his flashlight and quickly discovered that he had tripped over the dead body of Melanie. Having no time to mourn the loss of his closest friends, he scurried back to his feet and made a beeline for the dim light of the campfire. A dark figure followed him there. He could hear the footsteps and the leaves behind him. He turned around and saw that it was the very creature he had described to his friends earlier in the evening. It closed in on him, breathing deeply through its snout. He knew the beast was about to do the same thing to him as it had done to his friends. He closed his eyes, swallowed the saliva in his mouth, and braced for it. The creature swung at Fred with its claws, and he ducked out of the way, surprising it. He grabbed a pocket knife from the back of his pants and slashed the thing's arm open. He took the blood from it with his finger and applied it to his tongue. Smiling, he said, "This is for my father, you son of a bitch." He then said indistinguishable words from some ancient language and both beings blacked out. Fred awoke, staring at his frightened body from above. He heard his voice pleading for mercy, but he showed none. He reached down and ripped his own throat out. His arm was still cut, but it was healing quickly. As he walked away from the campsite, he remembered the words that came from his father's mouth just before the crash. "He who makes a beast of himself gets rid of the pain of being a man." I went camping about 3 weeks ago in the Huntsville National Forest in Texas. Me and three friends who came home for the weekend. They are all in college, and usually we all get together at least once a year. Old friends from high school. For the camping trip, we planned to go backpacking deep into the forest, live off of fish that we catch and animals that we could trap. We have been doing this for a while in Texas and in numerous places. Arizona, Colorado, if anyone familiar with the Spanish Peaks there, New Mexico. So we're pretty much used to anything you'd encounter out there. It was my turn to pick where we went camping. So I chose Huntsville. More accurately, it's Huntsville, New Waverly. So we drive up there, park our car in the camping spot, and start walking off into the forest. We had some laughs along the way, everyone catching up with each other's lives. We walked until it started to get dark and set up camp where we stopped. Everyone gathered wood to make a fire and we set up our tents. And we do what we always do, try and scare each other with weird stories. Around this time, we started to smell something very faint. It was noticeable, but not overbearing. We couldn't put our finger on what it was, so we just carried on. Mike had to go piss and he walked off into the forest. A second later, he came running back, piss all down his jeans like he had missed really bad. Immediately, we all cracked up and threw some jokes at him. Then we noticed that he was white as snow and trying to catch his breath. He starts screaming for us to follow him and runs off. We all get serious and go follow him, not knowing what the problem was. We start to hear a faint scream and crying in the distance, in the direction that we were running. It was pitch black away from camp, and Mike had the only flashlight. We left ours at the camp. He had his because of his trip to take a piss. So at this stage, we didn't have too much choice but to follow the light, which was frantically pointing here and there in front of him. The scream gets closer and Mike starts to slow down. We then notice a ratty old cabin that looked like it was abandoned, except for a faint light that could be seen from one of the old mildew-covered windows. The crying was intense. Whoever it was couldn't breathe enough to let out a full yell. We all followed Mike up to the front door, and we could hear the crying from inside. As soon as he knocked on the door, it stopped. We all waited and heard really heavy footsteps walking fast to the door. There was a giant slam against the door and the sound of a bolt unlocking. Then, nothing. We waited for a bit, knocked a few more times, but still nothing happened. We walked around the house. There was no freaking way any of us were leaving each other's side, and noticed a window, which was a good way up. Alex took a deep breath and asked us to give him a boost so he could see inside. Me and Mike lifted him up to the window. We watched him brush away dirt and webs from the window and place his face against the window to try to see something. There was a quick beat. Then suddenly, he breathed in fast and let out a loud scream. Then he fell back from the window, screaming bloody murder the whole way. We all tried to calm him down, but he was hysterical. We went to him, but he started to shake, punch, kick, cuss, you name it, and then took off towards the camp. None of us wanted to be separated, so we all ran close behind him. We caught up with him and grabbed him and set him down. The fire was dying out, so I grabbed some nearby wood that we had collected, adding it to the fire. My hands were shaking and I had to do something. I went back to Alex and we tried to calm him down. He wouldn't. He kept screaming and breathing so hard, and then he eventually fainted. All of us are terrified now. And we all kept the fire high until sunrise.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Periodically, Alex kept waking up, screaming just like before. By sunrise, he was up and looked catatonic, just mumbling to himself and whimpering. Me and Mike decide to go look at the cabin now that it was daylight. We searched where we thought it was, except there was nothing there. Nothing at all. The indistinct smell from last night had now grown into a very strong smell of something dead, something stale. We headed back to the camping site. When we had gotten there, we found Alex had chewed into the sides of his face and swallowed so much blood that he was throwing up. John was at his back, and he looked like he was about to die from exhaustion. I guess we all looked that way. I just didn't notice until I saw his face. Alex said quietly that he needed to leave, now. We all started to pack up the tent. It started to rain really heavily. It was about noon, and the sky started to grow really dark. Alex started to go into a panic. He went and grabbed a large stick and yelled at us to leave it and leave now, or he'd knock us out and drag us out of there himself. Mike started to yell at him, and they started to fight. We broke it up and finished packing, and then started to make our way back. After a little while, we arrived at a creek we had crossed the previous day, only it was flooded over, and the water was moving too fast for us to cross it. Alex started to scream again, yelling at Mike for taking his time packing up the tent when we could have gotten out of there. This went on for a while until we finally convinced Alex to calm down and tell us what had happened. He said that as soon as he put his face to the glass, a face on the other side did the same thing and started to smile really big. It had dark eyes and a dark mouth, which was much bigger than Alex's, as the smile got as large as it could. A giant shadow behind it swung something down and sliced its face off. The face was stuck to the window, and he said it started to laugh quietly as it slid down. Mike, still pissed off, and though he wouldn't admit it, began to get freaked out, starting to argue with him again. We eventually started to follow the creek for a way to cross. We then started to see toys floating in the creek. Really old toys. Old Barbie dolls and baby dolls. This wasn't like any old trash floating in the creek, though. This was a lot of Barbies, a lot of baby dolls. One washed towards the side and Mike picked it up. It had some kind of voice chip that was dying, and started to say some gurgling words we couldn't understand, followed by its sad excuse for laughter. Then it sounded like it was whispering. We thought the batteries must be dying. He threw it down. We kept going, and the sun was starting to set. Alex was freaking out even more, and was whimpering and breathing heavily. We all started to see shadows move behind trees. Something we all called BS on until we all were seeing it. It was barely light out, and we stop as we see the cabin right in front of us. None of us knows what to think. Mike says, "This is bullshit. I'm going in there." Alex tries to stop him. We all do. All of us just wanted to go home. Mike says to all of us to F off and do our own thing. He doesn't care anymore. This is all bull. We start to hear hundreds of the same sort of baby doll as before, laughing, whispering, and trying to sing. We start to move forward past the cabin, all of us, and kept pushing forward. We smell something dread in the air, something stale, the same something as before. We started to hear something crying and something screaming. We kept on going. We eventually crossed the creek and left the woods. We get back to our vehicle and get in. It's pitch black. We drive. We're about to get on the 45 to Houston, but the road is under construction and can't be accessed. It points to a detour. As we head towards the detour, it seems to be a small, bumpy dirt road going into the woods. We then see a young girl come up to us. She looks like she was in trouble, young and pretty. She approaches the passenger side door, and she looks like she's really drugged up or beaten up. Alex doesn't roll down the windows, nor does he open the door. She reached for the handle, and he immediately locks it. She puts her face up to the window and starts to smile really big. We floor it. Alex starts to cry and scream, and we're all breathing heavily. We finally cut off of the street that took us to the 45, and we took it all the way. When we got back to my apartment, everyone doesn't know what to say, and we all break apart and go our separate ways. Mike messaged me later saying he's going to go back. I try to convince him not to, And all he does is say that it was our own minds that were screwing with us. I think he just wants to prove to himself he wasn't scared. I could smell that stench everywhere now. I don't go out anymore. I just stay in and don't answer the door. Last week, everyone I met was acting really strange. People that I knew for a long time and total strangers. My own dad. When I went to his place to eat supper with him, he just watched me, strangely, when I was sitting down. He didn't say a word the whole time. I kept asking him, "What's wrong?" He just slowly shook his head. When I was leaving to go home, I turned to wave. He had black eyes and an open mouth like he was in pain. When I started to walk back, he shut the door and bolted it. I stayed there knocking and knocking. Nothing. I called him. His phone was disconnected. I even called the police. Halfway through the questions they were asking me, the connections started to fade into static. I could hear a faint mumbling, singing, and laughing. Mike had completely vanished. There's not even a record of him being alive. When I call Alex's house, they talk to me like I'm some salesman. They said they don't know any Alex, and the police stop calling. The person who tells me this is Alex's mother. Someone knocked on my door, and when I went to look, I saw a face completely covering the people, and a giant smile started to form. I called the cops again, and instead of turning into static, they got really strange. "Sir, are you affected by any drugs at the moment?" "No." "Are you coming home anytime soon?" "Excuse me?" "Come home." And the call ended. My mail slot swings every now and then. Someone is sliding pieces of baby dolls through it. I try to call people now, and all I could hear is static and bad baby doll noises like this crying and screaming. My TV is busted, but when I went to go piss, I could hear it on. I might be going insane. Whoever lives above me started to scream in pain and crying deeply recently. I hear giant footsteps from their apartment. I hear bangs and something falling to the ground. From the neighbors to the right of my apartment, I hear what sounds like a baby that never gets tended to, and then it sounds like a baby doll whose batteries are dying. My phone has been ringing now, and it's Alex telling me things in a language that I had never heard before, nor could even manage to repeat. I keep getting emails of pictures of black and small colorations. Now I can't even access my email. Someone knocks on the door, then they slam against it. I hear the bolts unlocking one by one and I run to make sure to lock all them back again. Then I sit down and begin to cry.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
During my Boy Scout troop summer camp, we had lots of fun. We swam every day, earned badges, and ate gourmet food. But on July 3rd, 2012, something bad happened. 5 scouts went missing. All of them were from different camps, so there was a hard time pinpointing who would have wanted them. They were last seen at noon, and from then on, they were classified as missing. Because police cars were pouring into the parking lot, and because they didn't want anybody tampering with evidence, they had us stay in our campsites. No one was to move 15 feet away from them. My friends and I, however, had different plans. Behind our campsite was a big steep hill, and we wanted to explore it. So, when nobody was looking, my friend and I stealthily scaled the hill. It took a while, but we eventually reached the top. We were surprised by what we saw. A campsite. It had a small sign with the sentence, "Camp Number 0," written on it. It was disappointing, however, when we saw the camp only had 2 tents. One had a made bed and a duffel bag full of necessities in it. There was also a table with a cover suspended over it. On it was 2 Coke cans and 1 extremely sharp stick. It looked like it had been sharpened with a machete or some other sharp knife. The final tent's flaps were closed, but my friend and I eagerly opened it, hoping for something interesting. What we saw was interesting, in a way. It was the bodies of the missing scouts. My friend and I stumbled away and stared at the tent in silence, hoping that we hadn't seen what we thought we had. We eventually looked away. We could not unsee the frozen looks of terror on the carcasses. Once my friend and I snapped out of our deep trance, the sounds of twigs snapping and leaves crunching met our ears. We dove behind a giant boulder and sat in silence, listening to what was happening behind us. 3 different voices broke the silence. "Hello?" Whoever said that sounded like they were in a panic. 2 very deep voices replied, "We're back." I noticed the 2 voices. They were from my troop. The names were David and Mike. I also noticed that the panicky person was another kid in my troop named James. James repeatedly said, "Stay away, you freaks!" until the deafening noise of breaking bones and screams silenced him. A loud thump was heard, indicating that James had passed out or died. Blood puddles spattered everywhere, especially around the rock where we were hiding. My friend, being the scaredy cat he was, screamed a loud scream, blowing our cover. I gave him a death glare as we ran down the hill. We ran the wrong way down, however. The side had many more stumps, roots, and rocks. My friend and I had just started running as he tripped over a large stump. He jumped up and began running again, only to be stabbed in the back by the sharp stick that we had seen earlier. He screamed, and tears began rolling down his cheeks. I couldn't help him, but I saw Mike and David approaching and kept running. The last I saw of him was he was being dragged away, screaming for help. A deep feeling of guilt and relief filled me as I reached the bottom of the hill. The hill bottom met the field where officers were investigating the disappearances. The field went silent as all the officers turned towards me. An officer ran up to me saying, "Why are you here? Go back to your campsite." He stopped, mid-sentence, as he noticed blood splatters on my shirt. Then he said, "What happened to you?" The whole story came flowing out, but another officer stopped me and said, "Where are they?" I pointed to where the trail was. They all pulled out their guns and investigated the steep path. They came back with Mike and David, along with my friend. My friend was cut up, missing an arm, and deep lacerations through his forehead and chest cavity, yet still alive. An ambulance arrived, but my friend was done for. He had been rushed to the hospital, but we later received a phone call stating that he had passed away the night before. Although the police sent another team up to the campsite, nothing came of it. Why? Because the campsite was no longer there, according to the reports. Supposedly, the path ended before the campsite even had been spotted, and tons of weeds, vines, trees, and dead grass barricaded the trail. I came back in 2013. I walked up the narrow path my friend and I cut through the hillside during our escape. It ended abruptly, with tons of trees, leaves, and overgrowth burying the rest of the trail.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.